we're really fortunate to have John Thompson here. He's a professor emeritus of mathematics and statistics at University of New Brunswick, and is the author of the recent book, No Debate, The Israel Lobby and Free Speech at Canadian University. He was the chair of the independent investigation of the unfair treatment of medical researcher Dr. Nancy Olivieri at Sick Children's Hospital, Toronto, and he wrote the report on that famous whistleblowing case. And actually, that's why he's here, because he's here to celebrate the fact that Dalhousie University is that Dr. Olivieri is getting an honorary doctorate from Dalhousie University. So we're lucky he was able to make the trip for that, and so we made use of him while he's here. So I guess it's up to you now. You can tell us about the land of academic freedom and the Israel lobby. Thank you, Dr. Thompson.
So, Jim, thanks very much for the invitation, and thanks to everyone for attending the event that the organization has set up for this evening. What I'm going to talk about briefly are two unsuccessful silencing campaigns, which they're increasingly rare these days, and therefore they may be of some interest, but they do show that it's possible to resist the main force of propaganda in the current neoliberal era that we're all in, of which the situation in Israel and Palestine is simply a part. So both these events took place at the University of Toronto, and essentially in Toronto at York University, and both in 2009. The first one was a more confined affair in terms of the attention it got, and it may not have received a lot of attention outside the university, but to me, when I started looking at the larger issue that I mainly will describe, it was of particular interest because it conveyed a certain kind of message that we want to maintain for as long as we can in the university. So in the spring of 2009, there's a Center for Security Studies at York University. Many universities have these security centers. They're usually a collection of faculty from different departments, political science and so on, and they have various activities. And York has one of them. So the center had been asked by two of its senior members to issue an official statement on behalf of the center against the academic boycott aspect of the BDS campaign, the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions campaign. They met collectively, the faculty in the center, and decided that there was a significant matter of debate here, and rather than issue any unilateral statements, they would have a seminar series where they would discuss the BDS movement and academic boycotts in particular from the various competing perspectives. It happened that the first speaker in the series was Omar Barghouti, the name many of you may have heard. He's a very active member of the BDS campaign. And it was announced that on subsequent dates there'd be more events in the series where others representing different perspectives would be speaking. But the announcement of Barghouti prompted an immediate strong adverse reaction. President of the university, Mamdou Choukri, who's a professor of engineering, and the director of the Security Studies Center received a couple of hundred irate emails and telephone calls demanding that the invitation to Barghouti be canceled. So the good news of this story is that the director of the center and the president discussed this, and despite the opposition, they agreed that the talk by Barghouti should proceed. And it did, and more significantly, perhaps, the president, in an address to the university senate a few days after he made his decision, explained that York University was hosting this event with Barghouti speaking and what his topic was, and that this was important to have it at the university because freedom of expression is a core university value, as he put it. The larger and more complex controversy then actually began before this seminar series and escalated afterward. Barghouti actually was a speaker at both events, and this appears to have provoked some of the opposition to his merely giving a talk in the seminar series. Four members of the law faculties of York and Queen's University organized an academic conference to study a particular question, namely the relative legal, political, sociological, ethnographic, and so on aspects and virtues of the two generally discussed statehood models for Israel, the one-state model for the combined territory and the two-state model, where the currently occupied territories would become a separate Palestinian state. They submitted detailed proposals to their university administrations, and both universities provided substantial funding for the conference. They subsequently submitted a much more detailed, something like 45-page proposal to the Federal Granting Council for that academic area, SHRC, the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council. And the SHRC Selection Committee, which has faculty members from all across the country who are all independent and have a lot of experience in assessing these kinds of applications, rated the conference very highly and awarded a grant which is essentially the maximum that they could award for this size of conference. But as soon as the conference website was opened with a call for papers and invitations to people to apply to speak, controversy began to develop, and it mounted to higher levels in terms of the number of people protesting through the course of the year, especially in the roughly 4 months leading up to the conference in June 2009. Both York and Queens received many protests, but especially York because it was the physical host university. There were many hundreds of emails and phone calls protesting the conference and its subject matter. The protesters demanded either that the conference be canceled or that certain speakers be disinvited, or that the universities or SHRC, the Federal Granting Agency, withdraw the funding sponsorship. Most of the protests came from individuals, and not just from off campus, some from on campus, including protests from some very senior professors at the university. But in addition to these individual protests, and as I mentioned, there are a great many of them, four Israel lobby organizations weighed in quite heavily with public statements, one or more each, plus protests to SHRC and to the Harper government. The initial pressure was put on the administration of the two universities, and York especially, against the conference. But ultimately, after some indecision and wavering, you might say, both administrations came fully on side. In the case of Queens the administration never wavered. And at the very top at York, there was no significant wavering either. And I'll come to that in a minute. But in late May, it was made clear to the public that the conference would be proceeding as planned and on the date scheduled, and that the universities were fully supporting the right of the faculty organizers of the conference to academic freedom and to organize such a conference. Once that statement was made, especially by York, then the focus of the opponents of the conference moved to Shirk and the federal government, and they received many protests and quite possibly phone calls as well, but the only thing that we were able to get access to through Freedom of Information was email records and written correspondence. And we did get quite a number of useful pieces of information in that regard. I'll just mention the four Israel lobby organizations that were involved: the B'nai B'rith Canada, the Canadian Council for Israel and Jewish Advocacy, which I think now is called the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, with the acronym CEJA; the Jewish Defense League of Canada, JDL, and NGO Monitor, which is an Israel-based organization which is active internationally and seems to be one of the organizations that the Harper government particularly listens to, according to media reports. These organizations and the many individual protesters made the familiar allegations: one, that the event was an anti-Semitic event, or two, that its agenda was actually to attempt to delegitimize the state of Israel. Some of the protesters suggested that donations to the universities might cease, and JDL, in a sense, topped that by suggesting that if the conference weren't canceled, then it would mount a boycott against York University, which was a rather ironic type of warning, but it was there in writing. And furthermore, they repeated it because on the first email that went to York University warning of possible boycott to be mounted by JDL, they copied on the email one of the other major Canadian Jewish organizations, not one of the ones that I mentioned, and for some reason or other, whether somebody wasn't pleased about that, the same email came out a few hours later with that other organization's name deleted. So that was just a curious little sidelight in the entire affair. But once the lobbying against the conference went to the federal level, to Shirk and the federal government, relatively promptly the Harper government intervened. One of the ministers, the Honorable Gary Goodyear, Minister of State for Science and Technology, through whose department two of the granting councils report to Parliament for their budgets, his office issued a press statement saying that the government was very concerned about the complaints it was receiving and the allegations against the conference, and it had asked Shirk to reconsider the grant of funds that had gone through the usual peer review process. This media statement by the minister's office was distributed, as the email traffic that we got access to later showed, only to Jewish Canadian media sources such as Canadian Jewish News and so on. The public at large didn't know of the minister's statement because it wasn't released until several days later. So that suggests that this was a highly political act by the Harper government. Shirk, unfortunately, clearly was wavering, and because the minister's press release had been sent to some major Canadian Jewish organizations, some people connected with the conference itself got copies of this minister's statement, contacted our National Professors Organization, CAUT, Canadian Association of University Teachers. They immediately intervened and made a public issue of the government interference and the initial reaction by SHRC, which seemed to be indicating that it might accede to the government's request. Part of the email traffic that was disclosed under the Freedom of Information recorded a senior person in SHRC saying that he'd just spoken with the minister's communications director, and that SHRC officials should know that the displeasure of the government over this conference might have adverse budget implications for SHRC. Subsequently, when this is brought up in Parliament, the officials who were involved in the email exchange were said to have been misquoted, or that they'd gotten the facts wrong. But anyway, that's what the email said. So clearly, at least at the time, SHRC officers at the highest level within SHRC were being informed that, or given the impression that there might be adverse budget problems facing them. In any event, because of the public attention that this got in the ensuing week, in the Globe and Mail and so on, when CAT got involved and made it a public issue, the government did not persist, and SHRC considerably backed off and made a token but still inappropriate intervention with conference organizers, but ultimately backed off. So everything went ahead as planned. From my personal perspective, the existence of lobbying organizations is not the issue. That's a part of democracy, and certainly expressions of opposition to academic events are also part of democracy, and they happen all the time. The issue is that certain persons and organizations attempted to persuade senior university administrators, senior SHRC administrators, and the government of Canada to intervene to restrict the rights of freedom of expression of other citizens. This is, in my view, a very unfortunate precedent, particularly in the fact that the agency SHRC was established in the late 70s as under legislation clearly makes it arm's length. And in the Commons debates and in the committee debates at the time, around 1978, not only the Trudeau Liberal government ministers, but the progressive, I stress progressive conservative members of Parliament, when discussing the establishment of SHRC, both parties wanted to ensure that the legislation made this an arm's length agency. That's a difference between progressive conservatives and conservatives that probably should be better known than it is. Let me just say a couple things. I can respond to questions later if anyone would like some clarification or elaboration. Why did these two silencing campaigns fail? It's clear from the extensive documentary record that we've seen with presidents of universities and deans and so on writing various things that the main immediate reason is that academic freedom is not only well respected in Canada, it's well protected, and they knew that they would be in serious trouble of embarrassment both on and off campus and nationally if any measures were taken to adversely affect this conference. The more general reason is that at least until quite recently, there has been substantial toleration in Canada for political dissent. And despite what you hear about the United States, Canada actually has been much more liberal on political dissent in most of the post-World War II period than the United States. I mean, just to give you an example, a number of professors in several disciplines who were fired and blacklisted during the McCarthy era in the 50s and 60s in the U.S. were hired by Canadian universities. And the same is true of Britain. Some were hired in Britain. The only other thing I'd like to add, just a brief note. The topic on the conference program that generated the most opposition was the one-state model. And the aspect of the one-state model that seemed to generate the most ire was the proposal that such a single state should be one in which all citizens had equal rights. And as you probably know, since the concept of human universality and equal rights first emerged clearly in roughly the 1750s and 60s in France and also Scotland, a few other places, parts of Germany, it's been one of the most contested and often violently opposed principle of the modern world. So what we're seeing in this context of Israel and Palestine is really a question of whether or not people should have the same rights. So I think I'll stop there and thank Jim again for the invitation.